This segment of the Avaya Podcast Network is sponsored by CashFly. Deliver content fast with CashFly. Visit CACHEFLY.com to learn more. This is the Avaya Podcast Network, APN. Technology, news, and information. All in one place.
Has my E911 top 10 list remained the same? Find out next in the E911 Talk Podcast, episode 152, recorded on Saturday, July 13th, 2013.
Welcome to this edition of E911 Talk with your host, Mark Fletcher, product line manager for emergency services at Avaya. Now, here's Fletch.
When I sit down for a customer meeting, I like to start off each and every session with a quick overview of how E911 works. Now, quite often most people in the room, if asked, will say that they understand. Yet after a detailed discussion, I find that just about everyone walks away with something new that they didn't understand before. E911 is actually a very simple architecture, yet there are so many misconceptions that myths often become the truth, or at least perceived to be the truth. After all, if it's on the internet, it's gotta be true, right? Bonjour, I'm a French model. Well, since it's been about 2.5 years since I published my original top 10 list, I thought it would be great to update that list of misconceptions just to see what's changed. Now, if I'm going to do a countdown, I'm going to have to get a little help from somebody who's an expert at countdowns. And he also happens to be the announcer on the Avaya Podcast Network. So here we go.
Dropping 4 slots to number 10.
I have to install specialized camera trunks in my PBX to carry E911 calls. E911 calls can egress the PBX on any kind of trunk. Since the location reference is embedded in the call signaling, a trunk capable of carrying ANI information is required. In addition to being able to use CAMA trunks, the ANI information can also be conveyed within a PRI information element on a PRI or BRI trunk, or anything that has a D-channel associated with it. This one is quickly falling off the top 10 list. As people are becoming more educated, CAMA trunks are simply not cost-effective, nor are they efficient for enterprise use. Call setup times are lengthy and involve pulsing long digit strings of information using multi-frequency tones. With ISDN services becoming widely available, as well as SIP, the use of expensive, mileage-based CAMA trunks is becoming a thing of the past.
Down 5 to number 9.
911 is regulated by the Federal Communications Commission and mandated by law. Although it is true that 911 is regulated by the Federal Communications Commission, to say that it's mandated by law is a little misleading. In general, the FCC does not regulate E911 for multi-line telephone system, PBX systems. This remains to be a myth that is used by people looking to validate their point of view. E911 is actually regulated at the state level today. Now, there is an action being taken by the Federal Communications Commission that is looking into this particular problem. In 2012, a public notice of inquiry was made, and the industry responded that the problem does exist, but it is easily fixable and would have further traction if promulgated at the federal level. Now, I can tell you that the MLTS problem is on the radar of FCC Commissioner Jessica Rosenworcel and FCC Commissioner Ajit Pai. Personally, I believe that the California MLTS legislative actions are going to continue to raise awareness at the federal level. I also believe that they indicate a quick and easy solution to the problem through legislation is not a difficult task, nor is it financially unfeasible. The proposed legislation in California, as it stands now, will affect only 10% of the businesses within the state. However, those 10% of businesses encompass 80% or more of the workforce. Those are big numbers that just can't be ignored.
Tumbling down from 2 to number 8.
It is illegal to send any number other than your own for caller ID, therefore using ELINs not owned by the enterprise for E911 location reporting is actually illegal. This law only applies if you're using the fictitious caller ID, quote, with the intent to defraud, cause harm, or wrongfully obtain anything of value, unquote. And that's according to the Truth in Caller ID Act 2009, which was passed by the Senate. This was a rumor that floated around the industry for a short time. Many believe that it was started by those that manage the ANI Alley databases in an effort to protect their business. It's really irrelevant today, as most people realize that the law that prevents you from fixing a 911 problem is probably just not real.
inching forward by one slot to number 7.
Once E911 is provisioned in my PBX, I never have to worry about it again. Well, anytime there's a topology change in your building or an individual relocates to another emergency response location, an update of the information may be required. When you mitigate E911 in your enterprise network, make sure that part of the plan includes reassessing your needs, technology deployed, as well as an audit of your solutions and their accuracy. Depending on your organization and the amount of change, this should be done once or twice a year.
Climbing its way to the number 6 slot from the bottom of the list.
Wireless LAN location cannot be determined or tracked on the PBX for E911. Well, as a matter of fact, many wireless LAN controllers now support this functionality or access to an API interface. A wireless device on your network is just the same as any other device on the wired network. With many modern wireless systems, events such as device association and device deassociation can be sent to an application listening for these events. Devices can then be associated with a physical access point on your network and then provide the location routing advice to the PBX, as well as notify administrative staff where the device last was based on access point association. Many wireless LAN controllers, such as the Avaya 8100 series, actually have this functionality built into the core of the product. If it doesn't exist in your access point infrastructure, quite often there are API interfaces that will allow third-party vendor products to query the wireless LAN infrastructure.
Jumping up 4 slots to number 5.
Local trunking is required at every branch to enable 911 calls to reach the local PSAP. As long as you have trunking to the same selective router as your remote site, you should be able to reach your local PSAP. If not, a VPC provider would be useful. 911 centers in geographic regions are all interconnected through a facility in the carrier called a selective router. 911 centers in remote regions that are not connected to the same selective router are not reachable through the PSTN. There are two ways of solving this problem. Number one, get remote FX or CAMA trunks, usually not a cost-effective solution. And Number 2, a VPC carrier providing umbrella service will typically provide access to all of North America and Canada.
Gaining some traction from number 7 to number 4.
I can provide a better service if I answer 911 calls using my internal security staff. Local termination or operating a private emergency answer point, or PEEP, must be carefully considered by your risk management department and your local public safety agency. It's surprising, but this actually seems to be a good idea to many people. If you operate a staff position internally, and those people are trained to the same standards that an emergency medical dispatcher has been trained at a public 911 center, then you might have the basis for doing this. If you don't, then you may be asking for more trouble than it's worth. In addition to employee training, you'll need to think about extra battery backup and redundant facilities in the event that that localized solution is down. The last thing that you want to do is block valid 911 calls from reaching public safety because of a failure in your equipment.
Holding steady at number 3 on the list.
Since my cell phone works for E911 everywhere, I'll just use that for my 911 calls, since the PSAP can always locate that phone. Cellular phones are capable of providing your location using two very different mechanisms. Unfortunately, neither of these function very well indoors. Public safety officials recommend landlines for the best accuracy. As mobile devices become more prevalent and the saturation level of cellular devices surpass the population, there's no surprise that this rumor has stayed the same at number 3. Public safety officials still say that fixed landlines are the best technology to use for 911 calls. This will most likely change with next-generation 911 networks and more intelligence in the endpoints. But for now, reach for the phone on the desk.
Climbing 3 slots to number 2.
911 in my PBX requires extensive programming and costly recurring charges. In many cases, 911 deployment within an enterprise can be accomplished by using only the feature set built into the PBX. E911 is not a box that you can just plug into your network and walk away from. Defining what you want to have happen when your users dial 911 is the first step. The next step is defining each type of user based on their specific needs, and the final step is deploying technology that will address those concerns.
And once again, for the second year in a row, coming in at number 1.
Your PBX sends location information to the PSAP when you dial 911. Your PBX sends one piece of information on a 911 call, caller ID, and nothing more. Once again, this remains as the number one myth for PBX and MLTS systems. I believe this is due to the way that E911 is presented, that is quite often misleading. Instead of trying to educate the user community, some try to take advantage of an administrator's lack of knowledge and misguide administrators in a way which may not be a best practice, but sounds good. Hyped up sales pitches and warnings of liability and risk analysis reports that identify a moderate risk regardless of how you answer the questions don't really solve any of the problems. They remind me of the door-to-door vacuum cleaner salesperson that drops dirt on your carpet only to show you that his vacuum cleaner picks up all of the dirt. Another common tactic is to make E911 sound complex and then offer an appliance solution that is seemingly plug-and-play only to end up being a single point of failure in the call path. Customers are intelligent, and given factual information, will make the right decisions. Today's administrators generally understand the problem behind E911 and location discovery, and the fact that yesterday's technology, where a telephone number equals a location, no longer holds true in a modern enterprise network. So although this myth is still untrue today, new technologies are emerging that'll allow this myth to become reality as we develop and deploy over-the-top solutions and prepare for next-generation 911 services available to the enterprise. The number one piece of advice I can give to anyone on this is to make sure that any vendor provides a full next-generation 911 roadmap for their product. And remember three important things. There is no transition to next-gen 911. Legacy E911 uses Annie and Allie. Next-gen 911 uses Pitaflow. Sorry to burst anyone's bubble. Those are the facts, so don't get caught up in the hype. The E911 Talk podcast is brought to you by the Avaya Podcast Network. Executive producer, Daniel Pioretti. APN LATAM correspondent and producer, Guadalupe Eugeni. APN correspondent and guy on the street, Guy Clinch. APN LATAM correspondent, Gabriel Gomez. Official APN podcast voice dude and the best countdown dude in the business, Spider Harrison.
Thank you and good night.
I'm Mark Fletcher, APN program and creative director. You can follow us on Twitter at @Avaya_APN or using #APN or #APN podcast. Be sure to follow our new landing page, avaya.com/APN, for event coverage and all of our hosted shows. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.
You're listening to APN, the Avaya Podcast Network. Find us on the web at avaya.com/APN.